Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Jamie Baines. Today's guest is actor and best-selling author John Lindstrom. As you'll soon learn, John caught the acting bug when he woke up in the middle of a James Bond film and saw two guys on the screen fighting to the death. With that goal in mind, he set a course for Hollywood and all the hard work and frustrations associated with an actor's life. Apparently, feature films, various television shows, a regular stint on General Hospital in Port Charles, and recording audiobooks weren't enough for him. So he decided to write a USA Today best-selling novel as well. With all of that going on and fighting a cold, he graciously agreed to come on a small podcast from a guy that he's never heard of. Incredible. But enough of my rambling. Sit back, relax, and take a listen to our conversation. I hope you enjoy it. And welcome back to the podcast. Tonight's guest is John Lindstrom. He is an actor, a very prolific actor, and now currently a best-selling author. How are you, John?
Oh, once I shake this cold, I'll be perfect. But other than that, just great.
So, John, man, look, your background and your filmography is just so extensive. Can you give us a little background of what you've been on? Your main things are, well, I shouldn't say main things. You've got so many. General Hospital, Port Charles, just so much, just so much. How did you get started in it?
I seem to do everything old school. I had originally begun really through my father. My parents raised my brother and I in Medford, Oregon, which was 10 miles from Ashland, Oregon, which was the home of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. First Shakespearean theater in the country. So at a very young age, we were traipsing over to Ashland to see Shakespeare's plays. I can't tell you what it's like for a five-year-old to sit through the unabridged version of Julius Caesar, but something happened. But what really got me hooked was they took me to see From Russia with Love when I was a child, and I slept through most of it, but it was at the local drive-in, and I remember looking over the back of the seat, you know, waking up, and just in time to see the fight between Sean Connery and Robert Shaw in the train. And I wake up from dead sleep to see two men fighting to the death, and I thought, I want to do that.
Now, how old are you now at this point?
I was that young, and I wanted to do something like that. But my father also was an ad manager at the local TV station, and he used to have to write and produce and direct commercials, mm-hmm. local commercials. So he used to cast me in them. So that kind of got me started, really. But old school way of doing things, I left college at the University of Oregon. I loaded a pickup truck, and I moved to Los Angeles. And it took me, they say it takes you 7 years to be an overnight success. It took me 7 years to actually break in and get out of the restaurant business.
And was it frustrating, or were you aware going into it that you would have to, you know, pay dues and it would take a while? Or did you think, you know what, I've got it. I can go here and I can just start working.
I never expected it to be easy. I think I knew learning from, you know, high school and college theater and just from being around that if it were easy, everyone would do it. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it would be this hard. Maybe that's the answer. It was harder than I thought it was going to be, and it was really hard, you know. I mean,
and is it?
No, that's not even the correct answer. Would be, no, that's right. I thought it was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be, but I thought it was really hard. But be that as it may, I also didn't leave myself an out. I didn't graduate from college. I left 2 years early. I didn't want that thing to fall back on. There was something in me that told me it was this or nothing.
Was that your intention to have no net?
Yeah, yeah. I don't recommend that. Mm-hmm. Because if things don't work out, then really what you are looking at is a career, you know, driving Ubers and bartending and you know, a lot of jobs that you probably would rather leave behind because they're just so physically taxing.
And when you got your first acting job, did that quickly lead to others, or was it still a grind every day to kind of get to where you wanted to get to?
The first ones were really just kind of blips on the radar. They gave me some encouragement, some confidence. And then, like I say, it was 7 years. I'd gotten some episodic work and a little TV movie work over the course of that time. And when I finally got my regular TV gig, which was in 1985, I replaced someone on the first syndicated drama, which was a soap opera called Rituals, and which I think aired in Los Angeles at like 2:15 in the morning or something like that.
Prime time.
Prime time, right? But it got me in, mm-hmm. and I could give up my waiter job and my bartending gigs and things like that. So I think once I got that job, then things became a bit easier. But then again, before I got General Hospital, I'd been in the business for several years by this time, and leading up to that phone call, I hadn't worked in 2 years.
Really?
Yeah, and that's, you know, and that just happens. You know, and that's, boy, I'll tell you, that's a long time for the phone not to ring.
It is, and is that time, are you getting more frustrated, or again, is it the acceptance that that's part of the business that you're in?
You start to wonder, you start to think that there must be some conspiracy against you, because, you know, you watch these things on television, or you go to see movies, and, you know, and I was working in Hollywood, so I wanted to work in television and film. And I remember it was a TV movie about the torpedoing of the USS Indianapolis, which you probably recall is the ship that delivered the bomb to Hiroshima, you know, for it to be dropped on Hiroshima. And it was so secret that they got torpedoed on the way back and they couldn't send a distress signal. So all these guys wound up in the Pacific being eaten by sharks. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a horrific story. Mm-hmm. And I could not get in for an audition for that. And a couple of years later, even though all these guys were, I mean, they were definitely contemporaries of mine at the time. A couple of years later, I happened to see it on television with my girlfriend at the time. And we're looking at all these guys that I know that are in the movie. And she turned to me and said, "No wonder you thought there was a conspiracy against you."
Because everybody but you is in there.
Everybody. I know. It was like everybody in my age range but me was in that movie. So, you know, you just don't know. I mean, these things happen, you know. It's just part of the very cyclical nature of being an actor, and you just have to learn to roll with it.
And another thing I wanted to ask you about, especially about being an actor, and I'm sure a lot of people ask you this, like, you have so many, especially when you do, like, your soap operas, because you're on all the time, so many lines to remember. Did that come easily to you, or does it come easily to other actors as well?
It's a muscle that you work. I can see that it comes easily. It comes more easily for some than it does for others. The ones who really get into a hole are the ones who come from a different medium, like primetime or from features, and they've never had to learn lines like this. And especially now, because the budgets are so truncated that there's not a lot of room for an extra take during the course of the day. So, you know, all I can say is I've been doing it so long, it doesn't matter where I am. I am able to learn lines very quickly, but it has a lot to do with memorizing what the scene's about, what the ideas and images the scene conjures in my head. That's how you memorize lines. It's not trying to memorize verbatim these words. That just kind of comes as you do the other work of acting, if that makes any sense. For instance, this past weekend, why I have this cold is I pushed myself so hard. I was doing several General Hospital episodes, plus my book launch, and then I flew to Dallas to shoot a one-day, what we call a proof of concept short, on a movie that is looking to raise money. And you do these once in a while. And part of my job was to do a page and a half monologue. And for some reason, I was able to memorize it and do it in one take. Other people probably would have had real problems with it, but it's because of my daytime experience that allowed me to do that.
And are you memorizing it verbatim, or do you have wiggle room to ad lib as long as you're getting the point across?
It depends. It depends on how specific the need is for a given word or phrase, which might lead to something else that you're going to shoot tomorrow or next week. You know, so sometimes it has to be very, very specific. Usually you want to try, especially with soaps, because they're cranking out so much material all the time, they can't get the lines perfect. And so you want to try and make them your own, and that's allowed. But when I was shooting True Detective, you know, you don't mess around with Nick Pizzolatto's dialogue. He works incredibly hard on fashioning that to have a certain kind of rhythm and pace. So, you know, I could be standing there doing a scene with Vince Vaughn, and neither one of us are messing with the dialogue at all.
And you know that for a fact.
Same
going in, you cannot
same
do it.
For Bosch, too. What's that?
And you said you know that going in. Like, I need to, he expects that to be me to say it the way that he's written it, not ad-libbing
or
anything.
Yeah,
like
you know
that.
That going in. You know that going in. But you also, you know, you can look at it and go, well, this doesn't need to change at all. You know, I don't need to fiddle with this.
And do you have, I guess, input on your lines for, like, for the soaps especially, since you've been doing it so long? Maybe not so much for the newer stuff or the what is so, you know, way it's written. But do you have any say on the what how your character is going to go or what your character is going to say?
Depends. Yeah, everything is almost conditional. You know, if I want to have an impact on a character that I'm playing, if I'm on a soap, and this a soap is the only place I would do it, because I'm on the show all the time, so I know the characters and all that. But if you want it to go a certain way, then I would suggest that you sit down and you plot out a story, and come up with the beats and the specific things that have to happen, and what goes on with the character and the characters around you in the arc. If you want it to be written a certain way, then sit down and write it. And I've done that quite a few times. And they've, you know, the writers have always been receptive because, like I say, they have to crank out so much that they usually welcome somebody coming in and giving them an idea that they can run with.
Do they? So no.
They would. Yeah, they would. Not always, but they have. Yeah.
And how do you think that, because the media kind of landscape is changing, especially with a lot of like influencers and, you know, the YouTube and all that kind of stuff. What do you think that's a good thing, bad thing? Do you have to kind of roll with it? What are your kind of takes on that?
I think there's no way to put the genie back in the bottle. You know, it's just somebody dreamt it up and now it's here and we're just going to have to deal with it. It's like the music industry dealing with digital sites like Napster. You know, well, the music companies are still doing okay.
Right.
They figured it out. There's a lot of DRM. There's a lot, you know, things that don't allow you to rip and steal. I don't like ripping and stealing anyway, but, you know, if you're talking to a 12-year-old kid and it's right there in front of
them. There you go, right.
You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, but that was always true when you'd say, you know, hey, man, here's a cassette. Why don't you dub it off? You know, we used to do that with music and not even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and the electronics company would make machines that allowed you to copy your music or your movies or whatever, you know, and record everything. So, you know, it just is what it is. Nowadays, I just look at YouTube and Instagram and all these different outlets as just the new delivery system. It's like streamers. I don't have a, you know, a cable satellite or anything. Everything's coming through my internet.
And is it easy for you to transition?
And I never thought I would do that.
And that was my because you're not a young guy. You're in your 60s. I'm not a young guy. and so have you found that you need to be flexible with when things change? And do you see pushback from older actors who don't want to do that?
Well, not from the ones at work.
good point.
good point. Yeah, it's you have to. It's like rolling with the unemployment periods. You just have to accept this as this is the landscape as it is now. Mm-hmm. No, I don't really see it. I don't see anybody fighting back and saying we need to go back to something. I think everybody's smart enough to know that what we're faced with is simply the way it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And in 10 years' time, it's going to be something different. Right. So if we're lucky enough to be here then, we'll be going, wow, remember when we thought, our our app on our Apple TV was so cool, and now it just looks kind of antiquated.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Well, yeah. And you've branched out now into being an author of a fiction novel. How did that happen? How did that come about?
It was the next logical step. For me, I found that pretty much whatever I've been interested in exploring as a new mode of expression, somehow everything that's come before that has prepared me for it. And I say that because, okay, I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to be a movie and TV actor. So I came to Hollywood and I learned what's going on. And once I learned to act, I started getting jobs. And then you start getting jobs, you find yourself sitting in a dressing room kind of watching yourself grow old. So I bought a laptop and I started to write screenplays because everybody in Hollywood and their dog has a screenplay. So you have to do that. And I'd read 1,000 of them. I knew what made a good one and what made a bad one. And sure enough, my first screenplay got made. It was made into a movie called The Hard Easy with Peter Weller, Bruce Dern, and Vera Farmiga. And so I kept up at that. I wrote another one. I wound up directing that. And then somewhere along the line, somebody said to me that Joan Didion had said that screenplays were basically a big outline for a book. And I had wanted to write a novel for a long time, I think when I was about 20 or something. I just, you get lost in bookstores and go, God, I wish I could do that.
I was going to ask, are you an avid reader?
I am, yeah. And I love crime. Mm-hmm. I love reading the crime stuff. The OGs like Chandler and Hammett and Kane, I love those guys. But I also love more contemporary-ish, like Elmore Leonard was, mm-hmm. to me, was just like, he was the man. Cormac McCarthy, Joan Didion, these were people that just had such an incredible economy of writing that I wanted to try and emulate that. And then I started doing audiobooks. I was just kind of invited into that world unexpectedly. And along the way, part of it is you're reading really good books and you're going, okay, I have to read this out loud, and you begin to see it in a different way. It starts, the mystery of how to do a book kind of begins to reveal itself to you. At least it did to me. And there were a few of those guys that I really thought were extraordinary and inspired me. There was also the part of it where I went, I'm narrating some of the books and I'm saying to myself, wow, this got published? You got to be kidding me.
I can do this.
Because I just felt it was predictable and clunky and, but then there were guys like Don Winslow, mm-hmm. and Blake Crouch, yeah. mm-hmm. and Alex Finlay, who wrote incredible prose. And I started writing it to these guys to thank them because it did give me encouragement to do it. And Alex actually wrote me right back within 5 minutes. And we've since become friends. And he's the one who told me, look, if you really want to write, John, here's what you got to do. You got to sit yourself in the chair every day. And you have to go to the book conferences. And that's how you're going to meet other writers. You're going to meet people in the industry, and then we'll talk about how to get an agent. And so I, you know, again, old school.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a book. Alex suggested that I find a private editor, which I did, and get the book into shape before I even submit it to anybody. And we cut about 30,000 words out of it.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
So it was close to 100,000 words, and it was so we cut it down to about 75,000, I think, which was good. You know, I didn't love it, but it made sense to me. So, you know, let the pros do their job, and that was part of my being flexible. You have to be a teachable person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, learn what you don't know. So that's what led me to it. So by the time I sat down and started to write about Winston Green and his dysfunctional family and friends, I was pretty much prepared on how to do it. So I don't know. I just sat down one morning and shut the door and started typing, and that's what came out. So
and did you write every day?
Ready, and I guess I had a need to do it.
And did you write every day like they told you to do? Were you able to do that? I know, because no, how busy you are,
yeah.
But you still set aside the time. How long would you write a day? Would it just depend?
Usually 2 to 3 hours, which is what I still do.
Wow, no kidding.
Yeah, you know, until you run out of steam, and then you're just kind of done. I know there's people like Stephen King and other people that will, you know, set up their hours and they write all day. You know, I don't think I can do that. Which is why my output's going to be a lot less than theirs. but I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Well, do you outline your books?
But yeah,
or do
you have to sit down every day. You have to sit down every day just to get the rhythm going and mm-hmm. stay close to it. At one point, I had written for about a year, and then I had to put it down because General Hospital decided to bring back a dead twin. And I couldn't find the time to sit down and write. So I had to put it down for about a year. And then COVID hit, and I could get back to it. And then 6 months into COVID, soap operas were the first shows to start back up, and I had to go right back to where we had left off. So I had to put it down again for another 6 months. So all in all, it took me about 4 years to write
writing time.
It was about 2 years of actual writing time.
And did you have to go back to it after you put it down to remember kind of where you were to get your flow back?
Yeah, I did. I actually printed it out and read it like, you know, old school, just, you know, read the page after page after page until I got back to where I could find my way back to kind of like the personality of the book, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, do you outline your books or the book, or do you kind of go by the seat of your pants and just see where it takes you?
There's that phrase that I hate. Are you a plotter or a pamper?
Yeah, I know. I know.
Yeah.
It's they always
right?
the
yeah.
authors
yeah.
always
People
get asked
always
that.
Ask you that. But I love the way you asked it.
Well, thank you.
I think I don't really plot. I do a beat sheet, and I have that near me. I've tried putting scene cards on the wall, and it just doesn't really work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reminded one of the I did a during COVID. I recorded 7 Isaac Asimov novels.
Golly,
like
John! Where do you find the time? Where do you find
well,
the
it was,
time?
It was COVID, so. I had plenty of time during COVID, but
wow.
Two of his books was, one of them was Asimov's Guide to Earth and Space, which was went right over my head. But the other one was I, Asimov, which was his autobiography. And he talked about how he just, there was nothing he wanted to do more than just go up to the little alcove in his New York apartment and sit down at the typewriter and later a computer. And as he put it, watches the words appear on the page like magic.
Mm.
And to me, that's the place you want to get to, where you're trying to just keep up with your fingers because it's flowing so fast and furious. That's, I don't know, that's writing, and that's where the truth comes from. So I, it's like, well, if you're going to, you can plot, you can do all that stuff. I mean, you know, and that's not to say plot and structure and all these things aren't important. Mm-hmm. They are. But those are things that kind of, I think, develop and take shape for me as I go. And then they become more clarified and stronger as I go back through additional drafts.
And do you enjoy writing?
I love it. I absolutely love it. I think it's just the greatest way to spend some time every day with yourself and your creative mind and all these people that, you know, you're hardly alone. Mm-hmm. You're in there with all these people that are kind of talking to you in your head. So, I love it. I really love it.
And man, you're so positive, you're so open, so willing to just to talk to everybody, seems like, who asks. How do you maintain your positivity? How do you stay so upbeat?
Well, on the one hand, I haven't always been that way. I've gone through periods of terrible depression. But now I'm in a place where I get to get up every morning and do something that I love. And it's as a result of the work that I've done and the bridges I've built and trying to maintain all that. So I can get up if I'm not going somewhere to act that day, I can write. And if I am going to act someplace, well, that's great too. I can go do that. I can go see movies. I can go hang out with my friends. I can do dinner parties. There's just, you know, 1,000 great things that I can think of to do in the course of any one day that if I were to feel shitty about my lot in life, I'd say, go ahead and kick me, you know, because I got nothing to complain about.
And what would you recommend to people who are also trying to find their positivity? What kind of advice would you give them based on your life experience, based on, you know, your age and just life in general? Because, you know, there's a lot of negativity out there, but there's also a whole lot of positive stuff out there too.
Yeah. You know, positivity is where you find it. And I think, you know, there's simple acts you can take. Like if there are negative people in your life, don't hang out with them. It's just don't.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, they're not that good a friend anyway, so just move on. And, you know, because there's plenty of really positive people who want the best for you, mm-hmm. honestly want the best for you. But I think, you know, I kind of have to answer that in a I wish I had done this when I was younger kind of place. Like I said, I think I really wanted to write books when I was about 20, and now I'm 66. So I guess I had to think about it for a while. But there was a confidence and there was a reluctance to embrace my own desire. Now, ambitions are different, you know, but I had a desire to sit down and write and get lost in that and to be able to express myself somehow. And I wish I had trusted that sooner. And because it's there for a reason. And I would say, you know, if you want to find positivity, follow that desire and that will lead you to your best life. So that's if I have any pearl of wisdom, that's it.
That sums up my podcast exactly, and this interview fantastically, man. I really, really appreciate you taking the time. I know you don't feel well. I know you're very, very busy, and I truly appreciate you coming on and taking the time to talk to me and my listeners.
Well, Jamie, this has been a good one, and you know what? Thank you for such great questions, and you know, not everybody has those. But, you know, you're a real dude, and I appreciate it. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again.
I hope so. I'll be happy to.
All right. You take care of yourself.
All right. You too.
All right. See you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's it, guys. What'd you think of John? It's easy to get a picture in your head of how you think a famous person is going to be, how they're going to talk, how they're going to interact with everyday people, how. I had no idea, going into this interview, just how down-to-earth John was going to be. Talking to him was like talking to someone you meet in a coffee house, a bookstore, or a record shop. just such a great guy, and I truly enjoyed our conversation. Make sure that you check out his new novel, Hollywood Hustle, and let's hope he's got more on the way. I want to thank John for taking the time to talk to me, and I'd like to thank you for taking the time to listen. We're all in this together, and together we can make this world a better place. Until next time, take care of one another, and thanks again for listening.